U.S. Army Training Video 347-C, How to Eat a Hamburger. There's plenty to consider before taking a bite of that delicious meat circle. Plenty. Fork or no fork? Napkin tucked in or on the lap? Is licking an acceptable way to consume your burger? Well, don't worry, you little lemon drop. All you need to do is follow these very simple instructions and you'll be on your way to Yummy Town in no time. Step 1. Build up a hearty appetite by chasing orphans through the street. Watch out, orphans! Here comes America! Step 2. Scold your burger. Tell it it's been a naughty burger and you have to eat it as punishment. Step 3. When you sit down to enjoy your hamburger, ensure that the ketchup packet is aligned facing the nearest westward mountain range as the time reaches precisely 6:58 p.m. Australian Central Time while reciting the entire novel of War and Peace backwards from memory. Before taking your first bite, your lower jaw must be at a perfect 30-degree angle in accordance with the hamburger, which must be held at an exact horizontal plane while looking at your left thumbnail the entire time. You may need to snag a buddy with a protractor and level to help you achieve this perfect posture. Don't forget to enjoy every bite. If you don't, your burger will be taken away for fear of offending the hamburger gods, and you'll have to eat moss off rocks to survive. Wow. Just think. In only 1 to 2 years of training, you'll finally be ready to eat your first hamburger. Simple. Completely simple. Let's go, US of A.
This is InfoCast 5000.
It caught me off guard there. Hey, everybody, it's me, the made-for-the-theater guy, Baron Bally.
Can't catch him off guard. And this is me, catch you off guard, Sam Acuff.
Hey, Sam, this is the...
What? Are we even recording?
I don't know.
Good.
This is the podcast where we dive into the history of things familiar to everybody. Join us as we try to figure out why everything exists. That was a little theater there.
And I noticed. Yeah. And this week, we're covering hamburgers. What could be more American than hamburgers? Except for this season, we've also done monster trucks.
Yeah, we've done monster trucks. We've also done, we've talked about rockets a lot in the last episode.
We talked about rockets, which is pretty,
American.
Yeah, it's American.
It was also Nazi and Russian.
If you get like a model with a hamburger on a rocket being shot out of the back of a monster truck.
Then that is the most American
thing. Could also happen in Russia, though. But if she was holding like, I don't know.
Russians would be into that, except there would be tracksuits mixed up in there too.
I was thinking of a way to tie in tracksuits as something you could hold, like a pair of Adidas?
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, should we get back on it or something?
Let's get rolling on the hamburger escapades.
Are you guys ready for hamburgers? Yeah. Big Mac, Whopper, Baconator, Double Double, Krabby Patty. Some of the most iconic meals to ever exist. Legends among sandwiches, and yet so accessible. You can order the same quarter pounder with cheese in Hong Kong that you would in Columbus, Ohio, and you'd swear you never left the States. But how did something so synonymous with American iconography as baseball and Rascal Scooters come to prominence? Believe it or not, despite its simplistic construction, the delicacy we know and love has only graced us with its sweet, juicy mouthfeel for about 140 years. But the history of how its ancestor came to our shores goes almost 1,000 years beyond. So, if your hunger for history has reached its peak, like it has ours, please join us as we try to figure out why hamburgers exist.
It's to get me fat.
Hamburgers?
Yes.
You could eat better hamburgers.
Why?
So, the story of hamburgers begins where you'd probably expect it to. The Mongol army of the Khans. In the year of 1238, Genghis Khan's grandson, Kublai Khan, invaded Moscow and brought the traditional tenderized meat snack, now known as beef tartare. The Russians enjoyed the unique dish and adopted it, and this small transaction is oddly crucial to how we get to the iconic patty sando we love today. So I will say, it is contested as to whether or not Mongolians ate raw meat, as there is no legitimate reference in the Chinese historical records or from medieval observers in the Middle East, so I've read. But there are a couple accounts that may be little more than urban legends run amok, like the one about Attila the Hun, who was said by the Romans to have eaten raw meat that was softened by placing it between his thighs and the flanks of the horse he rode to, quote, tenderize it.
Okay, so on top of that, I read a New York Times article today that was talking about how medieval chroniclers also noticed this behavior and said that it wasn't to eat the meat, it was to put some kind of padding between the horse and the sores because they were riding their horses all the time and they were being bad to the horses, but it was like it was a saddle pillow.
I get that, and I get that that was probably written, but I think they were just stupid. Because you're not.
Is that
use...
what the Mongols just told them? Oh yes.
Or yes, they're just stupid. Like, oh, meat pillow. Yeah. You know, fucking meat shoes, meat gloves.
All of this meat, especially by the Mongols, was probably actually horse meat. Because how the fuck are you going to tend to cattle while you're out, like, raiding across, you know, the plains of Europe?
Jump the gun a little bit, but a lot of, quote-unquote, steak tartare was horse tartare when the Mongols ate it, if they ate it. And I digress. Delicious. I'm not... Well, you know what? A lot of countries today eat horse.
I don't want to meet them.
You wouldn't know. Horses. You wouldn't know until you're halfway eating it, and then you'd be one of them. You know, I digress. And I'm going to go back. I don't think that they're stupid. I think it's just...
Are you backtracking now?
I'm not backtracking. I just think, you know what? I don't know what to make of that, of meat pillows, meat padding for the horses. But the reason why, I jumped the gun in saying that it was stupid, I think it's just illegitimate because as we covered in taxidermy, why there wasn't a lot of taxidermy in the Middle East, in the Middle Ages, is because commodities were scarce to begin with. Nothing was wasted for superfluous reasons. And I think meat, you know, people, you know, valued what food they had. I don't think they would have wasted meat by padding it between the saddles and the horses.
I don't know. Because at the same time, you know, if you don't have any other padding, I guess, like, your horse is basically, like, if you lose your horse, you're going to die. You know? So.
Not necessarily.
You got other horses. Maybe.
And also, I'm just going to throw it out there. Horses have survived for centuries without meat shields between them and their riders. I will say, to answer another one of your questions, you know, when you said, like, what do you eat when you're moving all the time? That was a big part of why they tucked the meat in between the saddle and the horse, is because they didn't have time, and this is all going to tie in, but they didn't really have time at night. They were fierce warriors, the Mongols, right? They were nomadic. Their strength was that they were always moving. They were cavalry-based. They never really stopped, supposedly, according to the legend, they never really stopped to, like, create a campfire to cook at night, to, like, make camp and whatever. So this kind of was a way to prepare the meat on the move, and this is where I was going to tie it in. They would have horses in the, you know, they were actually ponies. Ponies in the front with the warriors, and then there would be oxen, cattle. Ponies in the front. There would be oxen and cattle pulling yurts behind that, and then behind that, they would usually have, like, sheep and cattle behind them. So it would be like the first ever mobile home, you know, mobile trailer unit.
So they did have livestock.
They did. Yeah, it wasn't always horse. Yeah.
I just assume they took whatever they raided, or they just took a chomp out of their own horse if they needed to.
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. You know, Asia's huge, all right? And they conquered a lot of it. And I'm sure you didn't always have your A crew with you. You know, you ran out of sheep sometimes and you had to steal somebody's cattle, whatever.
Yeah.
And why the fuck not? You're the Khans. You're the greatest army that ever lived. So the book of, I'm going to slaughter this, but Levasseur, Description de l'Ukraine recreates in more detail how this process actually worked. The horsemen cut the meat with 2 fingers of thickness. They sat on one side and placed it under their saddle. After 2 hours, they repeated the operation. I assume that means they switched to the other side. In this way, they were able to cleanse the blood of the flesh to imbalance to emblance it and to spice it without getting off the horse or light a bonfire that could give them away in the middle of the night.
Hey, I'm sorry. I have an issue with using that term, horse pillow, as a spice. Horse is not a spice.
No, no, it wasn't. It wasn't a horse spice. They spiced it. Like they seasoned it. Like, no, like they used salt and pepper and Mongol spices. I don't know, but they seasoned it before they put it under the saddle.
Okay. you know what? No matter how you fucking spice that thing after miles and miles of riding with that thing under your saddle, it's going to taste like horse.
You would never make it as a con. Anyway, side note, the name associated with Tartar is believed to have come from the Latin word Tartarus, meaning hell. See, 3 years after Kublai Khan invaded Moscow, the nomadic group of the Khan army, known as the Tartars, invaded the Holy Roman Empire, or the Tatars, sorry, in 1241. However, the Mongols did not advance far into the Holy Roman Empire, and there were no major battles to speak of, but they did encounter legionnaires, and the Mongols spent enough time with them to make an impression. The Romans considered the Tata people to be, and I don't know if I'm saying that right, it'd be like Tata, Tutu, I don't know, to be savage and barbaric, and because of their bloodthirsty reputation, they inserted the R at the end of their name, thereby linking them with Tartarus, which means hell. That's kind of cool. Like, I personally love steak tartare when I can afford it, and to know that it's like steak hell, yeah, it's pretty fucking rad.
I don't think I've ever had like raw steak like that before.
When I cooked in, when I worked in kitchens as a line cook, you know, the nicer restaurants I worked in, we did that a lot. Yeah, you'd a little for the customer, a little for me. A little for the customer, a little for me.
I just picture you taking handfuls of like raw meat, chunks of raw meat out of the line and just shoving them into your mouth.
Yeah, like nerds. Just No, I mean, you have to cook it. Like now, to pass standards of like health code, you have to cook it with citrus or something. So you usually squeeze a little lemon juice in there or something like that, or vinegar.
Well, it's funny that you say that. Because
that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
because I was reading today that the name Tartar actually comes from the tartar sauce that was served with it and has nothing to do with Tartarus at all. So I think it's up for debate as to where Tartar came from.
Are you telling me tartar sauce is where Tartar came from?
Yeah.
You would never sauce with steak tartare.
It's not what I personally made up. It's what other people have
written.
Where
on the horse did you keep the tartar sauce?
You don't want to know. You don't want to know.
Yeah. Gross. Anyway, so where does this He-Man raw meat pile delicacy tie into cooked meat sandwiches? Well, maybe you've heard of a little town known as Hamburg.
And this is a city that I think is hilariously built on top of a swamp by Charlemagne in 808 CE.
Well, New York's built on garbage, so yeah. I mean a lot of major cities are built on funny things.
Yeah.
And particularly for our story, it was a very important port for Russia's export trade starting in the 15th century, and more than likely because you have a bunch of merchant class Russians flooding into Hamburg, it's during this time that steak tartare becomes a European delicacy because, again, in case you missed it, the Russians adopted the Mongolian steak tartare dish while they're getting their asses kicked by the Mongolians. Jump another 300 years to the 18th century. Germany has become known for its tartare steak and made it into a popular, comforting dish. Sailors and other visitors started using the term Hamburg steak to share and describe the dish they ate whilst at the ports in Hamburg. At this time, the meal was typically made with shredded beef, local spices, and served cooked or raw, depending on your preference.
And tartar sauce.
No speculation. Throwing down the glove.
So
I don't know why I'm taking issue with that, but I am. It's disgusting.
Hey, I like the tartarus fact too. I'm just saying.
The Mongolians with little like serving size tartar packets for their horse meat.
Well, no, horse
meat that they cooked on horseback.
I'm not saying the Mongols were carrying it around. I'm saying it was the name came later. After, like, the Mongols were all done with it and, like, it became, like, an actual dish that people were making in restaurants.
Nah, it doesn't track.
So.
But there are people named Tartar.
Tatas, you mean?
Tatas. You know what? I said that. I took a leap of faith. I wrote Tatas as a direct, I pulled it directly from my source. And then I read a later source that said Tartar. But then the Tartarus thing wouldn't make as much sense. So I don't know. So
basically,
as we're going to find out, the history of hamburgers is a lot of pick and choose your own destiny of what's legitimate. So
just have fun. Listen to whatever we say is the truth.
We are the authorities for the next 40 minutes.
So, but why Hamburg? Why Hamburg?
Why Hamburg?
That's the question.
Why Hamburg?
Cattle thrives in many places around the globe. Well, GermanLivestock.ee, which is a fun spot to go to if you're drunk on a Tuesday night and very lonely, claims that Germany is the number one exporter of breeded cattle in the world.
Really? Still today?
Yep.
Wow.
That's what they say. That's what the Germans say.
HistorySlots.com did not pull that.
You know, there's certain things you're not going to find on HistorySlots.com.
There was a link that I could have clicked to see who the number one exporter of beef was, though.
And who was that?
Rod. His name's Rod.
So Hamburg, in particular, is this meeting place where four rivers come together, and eventually they flow into the North Sea. And these waters created not only swamps, but fertile pastures where Holstein cattle
Oh, they
could
grew
be
cattle
raised.
Out of cattle plants.
Yeah, exactly.
Cattle bushes.
Exactly.
The fertile cattle orchards of northern Hamburg.
Moo.
That would be terrifying.
What, just cows growing
trees?
On trees
that grew cows? Just like cow fetuses, like, and you're picking them like apples?
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh. We just like stepped backwards into like a Cronenberg fucking wet dream.
Jeremiah, why don't you go pick something from the veal tree for dinner tonight?
Because I can't find the will to live anymore, mother. Life is a nightmare and everything's pain. Why do the trees scream, mother?
Jesus Christ. I'm moving on. So these waters, as I've said, so because of things that I've said, because of proximity to these rivers, Hamburg became a large and successful port. And now you put this all together and you have a spot where the cattle raising was good business, as well as a convenient place to ship out the dairy products for cold hard money, and you have a perfect storm for tasty beef cuisine. Mwah. By the mid-19th century, Hamburg became an even more prosperous trading powerhouse.
I don't like that you actually kissed me for that sound effect.
Well,
now that we're talking cattle and trading, I think it's also appropriate to mention that in the 19th century, the leading exporter of beef in Europe was still Hamburg.
Yeah, because it's...
I didn't catch that in your notes that it was today, but I read that it was in the 19th century still. So they've been the leading exporter of beef for a long time.
Oh, yeah. I knew Germany, of course, from going to livestock...
.com.
I did find out that Germany was still big in the cattle exporting business, but I didn't know that Hamburg itself was still, you know, a big-time player in that.
Oh, yeah. My girlfriend Geneva. I mean, you know Geneva. I'm saying my girlfriend Geneva for the listeners at home. Spent many years living in Germany, and she said, I asked her about Hamburg, and she said, it's a big fucking deal. Like, it's a big port city today.
That makes sense.
She has night terrors from the cattle orchards.
Yeah, you have to put a meat pillow over your head.
You get PTSD from picking cows there, but it's a rite of passage.
So,
you ever just take a bite out of a fucking cow fetus?
I don't know. I'm sorry. I gotta just go on with this one.
Look at
so,
me.
I don't know what to say. Here.
Look at me.
Well, Sam, anyway. We just lost all of our listeners.
So. And we gained a couple new ones. See how that works?
Many,
law of equal exchange.
Yeah, yeah. Many had come to town to escape religious persecution from the Germanic Empire, the civil unrest of a revolution, or to gain greater economic freedom than they were able to experience in their home country. And it just so happened that Hamburg was a self-ruling state with a constitution that promised freedom. And it also happened that Hamburg was the second largest European port at the time.
So they became a big exporter of people, too.
They did. Yeah. They did. So from this port, more than 1 million Germans sailed west for the United States, and they brought all sorts of European goods with them, including a delight that was known as a Rundstück warm with them.
Rundstück.
Rundstück. And this translates to bread, wool, warm. Bread roll warm, and was essentially a Hamburg steak between two pieces of toast.
Ha 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 ha! Actually, according to some historians, the Rundstück warm, originated as early as the 17th century when Hamburg bakeries began making a round roll, not toast.
Here we fucking go.
Soon after, the roll began being served with leftover pork, beet roots, pickles, tomatoes, slices. or even chives, and gravy at lunchtime on Mondays, and it was then that the Runstuck Warm was truly born!
Listen, Sam, we both had a lot of, you know, historical conflicts on this podcast. I'm putting my goddamn foot down right now. Listen, you put some slab of raw meat down on a piece of roll. That roll is going to get soggy. It's going to fall apart. You're not going to be able to enjoy it. It's toast.
Don't take it up with toast. Me. Take it up with historyslots.com. However, once the hamburger... that was good, though. It was a good attempt, but you're wrong. However, once the hamburger round steak was popularized by the 19th century, it's no surprise that it became a popular substitute for the old pork and gravy.
And I imagine that, you know, for the immigrant sailing on a ship somewhere, it was probably easier just to have a sandwich with you rather than carry, you know, a whole sack full of clinking cutlery or whatever, you know, however they transported that back in the day.
I could agree with that. I think we could see eye to eye on that one thing. Other historians suggest it began as a comfort food or just a convenient way to stretch out your Sunday night leftovers. So I do agree, by the way, that it was a convenient thing to eat on travel. But as I said, it started in the 17th century before they started immigrating to the U.S. Really what it seemed like it was you would have a big Sunday night dinner, and it was a nice way to stretch that into Monday. So the dock workers would eat their leftovers from Sunday on Monday in between their bread. Why they didn't think to make a sandwich before this, whatever, I don't know. I don't work on the docks. But regardless, most historical records at least make note of the number of German immigrants that set up food stands in New York during the mid-19th century advertising the, quote, Hamburg-style steak, unquote. However, depending on your source, the first, quote, American-style hamburger might have also been created in Texas, Connecticut, Ohio, or Wisconsin. Once again, all fairly apocryphal accounts, and I'm going to say, just like I did in our hot dog episode, go listen to it if you want more meat history, I'm going to put my money on New York. Regardless, this is also where Hamburg's connection to the protagonist of our story today comes to a sad close. Because, like all things American, it was stolen. The Hamburg-style steak was quickly reconstructed in restaurants across the country and rebranded. Now, like I said, there's a lot of debate as to who introduced us to the first authentically American hamburger, but the earliest I found of it popping up in a menu was actually in 1837 in New York's Delmonico's restaurant. It was 10 cents, by the way, which in 1830s money had a purchasing power of almost $30 today.
Shenanigans.
Oh, gee, fuck you.
Shenanigans.
Hamburg, can we agree on a single bullshit thing in meat history?
Who indeed, Sam? Who indeed did invent the hamburger? Because the case against Delmonico is mounting. There was a book that came out.
My meat case is mounting. look at me, Baron.
You know what?
Look at me.
What? There was a book that was named...
there was a book.
Yes. It was named The Epicurean, which was a complete treatise of analytical and practical studies, which sounds official enough, printed in 1894, which has a segment written by Charles Ranhofer. Who was Charles Ranhofer? Well, the very chef of Delmonico at the time of beefsteak Hamburg style. And he happens to write about this very topic. And Mr. Ranhofer does not mention the meat grinder using this recipe. This is just chopped steak. And are we to believe this false idol of hamburgerism? I'll say it again. Are we to believe this false idol of hamburgerism as our savior? I say nay.
You're just proud of hamburgerism.
I love hamburgerism. It's my new religion. In fact, it is not a coincidence that hamburgers start showing up around the same time that meat grinders start becoming a household staple in the 19th century. Because where would our friend Hamburger be without his friend Meaty Grindy?
It's probably important to mention at this point that yes, until the incorporation of the meat grinder, the Hamburg-style steak was historically just chopped beef. Much like actual steak tartare you could order at a fancy restaurant today. But I agree with Baron, to get to the bottom of this, we need to set parameters of what a burger is.
Yes, we do.
So we need to talk about meat spaghetti.
The spaghetti.
Just begin, because today, by today's standards, if you ate a sandwich made with chopped beef, I think people would call it like a cheesesteak, you know?
Yeah, it's a cheesesteak, or it's, you know,
or a Delmonico sandwich, which is an actual meal still. So, like, I didn't think of this until just this moment, but another restaurant that I worked at, we sold, quote, Delmonico steak-style sandwiches. Then we didn't call them hamburgers, and it was just chopped beef cooked on a grill, and then you put it on a sandwich.
Legit question here. How do you keep, like...
As opposed to the other questions you asked me on this podcast? Fuck you.
How do you keep the meat chunks from falling out of the sandwich, or do you have to constantly keep it horizontal?
Well, I mean, we
time?
Cut it on a slicer, but...
Oh, so it's like deli steak?
It was a fancy cheesesteak.
Okay. So, since we're talking about ground meat here... Who is the genius that we can praise as being the first to push a slab of beef through that grinder and come up with a pink meat circle? And the answer is, well, as Sam said, we don't actually know.
So you might pink meat circle.
Please.
Look at me, Baron.
I'm not looking at you. I'm not. You know, as soon as you make eye contact, the fires burn.
Can't put
so,
it out.
There's...
They're, raging.
the old grill's getting fired up. There is a case for old hamburger Charlie, however, aka Charlie Negrin. And of course, everything that someone named Hamburger tells you is definitely true. His story begins at the age of 15 in 1885 at the Seymour, Wisconsin County Fair. Charlie is selling meatballs here. And one important fact to remember, these meatballs were ground, not made of chopped beef like some other blasphemers were doing out there. So, old Charlie is hawking his meatballs to hungry fairgoers, and they're wandering around peering at beehives or gawking at harvesting machines, and apparently children were just going around unsupervised trying to sell you shit.
What do you think county fairs were?
I mean, there's a certain amount of cardyism to every county fair, but usually, you know, some 15-year-old doesn't come up to
just
me.
Just lost,
like,
souls, yeah. Looking at...
You want to buy a meatball, mister?
Yeah, just like rural wasteland with intermittent, like, confectionery treats.
Unfortunately for Charlie, the meatballs were good, but nobody was buying. And there was one fundamental problem with the meatball idea that Charlie had not considered, is how are you supposed to walk and eat a meatball at the same goddamn time?
Why is nobody eating my meatballs? Oh, you just put the palm it like an apple.
Well, that you're right, Sam, but that the grip and dip doesn't come until later.
The grip,
decades.
The grip,
yeah,
and dip.
Yeah. That doesn't.
Charlie was ahead of his time.
But
bad bits aside, that is stupid. just selling oh. Meatballs.
Yeah.
At the fair, was he not offering a bowl for the meatball? Was he just like, here's your meatball, and then would just like plop it in your fist?
Yeah, I imagine he's got like some paper sack, you know, so that's like soaked through with grease.
Yeah, they're like falling out of the bottom.
He reaches in there with his dirty fingers, like fumbles around for a
and
while.
He half throws a meatball at you. He doesn't even have a booth.
Dogs loved it, though.
Yeah, it's popular with the dogs.
Yeah. So Charlie was
good old orphan meatball Charlie.
I think he had parents. I think they just let him do whatever the fuck he wanted.
A child with parents would not let them sell meatballs out of a sack at a county fair.
Well, yeah, but listen, you know, parenting was different back in the day. So Charlie's watching as his burgeoning business goes down the tube of the proverbial meat grinder. And that's when the muse struck Charlie, whispering in his ear that a better delicacy could be had. Oh, something more plausible. Oh, something the fairgoers could inhale down their gullets and walk and eat at the same time. The angels sang in unison as Charlie squashed his meatball between two slices of bread, said, "Eat this, you fuckers," called it the goddamn hamburger. I don't think he actually said, "Eat this, you fuckers." That was a little paraphrasing there. But... to some, this is the genesis of the grill delicacy that we know today. Charlie continued his hamburger selling ways, doing the Wisconsin fair circuit right up until his death in 1951.
How'd he die?
You know what? I don't know. I think it was natural causes. hamburger monster. I don't know.
I read it was autoerotic asphyxiation.
You know, somebody named Hamburger is into some weird shit. Yeah. That's all I'm going to say.
Who's Hamburger Charlie? I am. It's me. And then that's when he left us, the mortal plane, right there, right at climax. Good old Hamburger Charlie.
All they found was him in a dusty room. And
full circle, tartar sauce, and a little puddle right under him.
Yeah. I was going to say a noose made of raw hamburger. Is that taking it too far? Maybe it is. Did Charlie Negrin actually create the hamburger, or is he a charlatan? Homeofthehamburger.org, which is an actual website, claims that...
I like reading your sources versus my sources. Like, I know I don't include mine in the notes usually, but you always include yours, and I'm like, yeah, he would. That's where he would go for hamburger history.
Get the official sources. Look, how is a homeofthehamburger.org not an official source? It says
Home of the Hamburger. You're right. It is the home
right
of the
there.
Hamburger.
they claim that there are numerous, it's a goddamn home of the hamburger, there's numerous newspaper articles and clippings claiming that Charlie was at the Seymour Fair smashing balls between bread. And so I turned to the Wisconsin Historical Society for evidence on this claim, a site which has the second largest collection of newspaper articles in the United States, if you're concerned about the legitimacy.
Who's the first?
I'm assuming Library of Congress. I don't know about that one.
And now I'm curious. I might just look that up for Dirty Bits.
Yeah. I bet you it's Library of Congress.
Okay,
library. Yeah. Bet you it's a library. I didn't find shit. There was nothing. Nothing. Nothing on Charlie Negrin. No hamburgers. There's no mention of Charlie's existence even in the Appleton Post 1985 write-ups about the fair.
Wait, there was nothing on him even being a person?
Well, later.
I've seen pictures of him.
Yeah, no, he definitely served hamburgers at some point, but he was not...
Oh, he meant, like, not necessarily where he said he was at the time he said he was. Yeah.
Although, in hindsight, now that we're having this conversation, I guess, would it be weird for a reporter just to write about, like, random teenagers that are selling food at the fair? Is that something you include?
No, I think it's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the news I'm interested in. Who's selling meat out of a bag down at the docks, you know?
Old Charlie, 15 years old. He's selling his hamburgers. Boy, they're going like hotcakes. He couldn't sell his meatballs at all, but
you'll never guess who's got meat in a bag, fellas.
Extra, extra. So anyway, this all leads back to, what the fuck are you hiding, Seymour, Wisconsin? What does Hamburger Charlie not want us to know?
It's interesting, too, because they're very proud of that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In 2007, the Wisconsin State Legislature voted, it's like patting themselves on the back. The Wisconsin State Legislature voted to make Seymour, Wisconsin, the home of the hamburger.
That seems a little biased, perhaps. I just want to know who was there that might have voted nay.
Well, that was Hot Dog Pete.
Yeah, that's Hot Dog Pete. We're the home of the hot dog. No, that's not true, Pete. Well, fuck you. Those fuckers in Wisconsin, they hold a burger fest every year.
They sure do.
So they love it. They love themselves. Which, good for you, because you know what? Any other day of the year, I don't think about you, Wisconsin. Nobody does. Stop acting like you did something.
Wow.
Fuck you.
Throwing shade at Wisconsin.
Yeah,
right
if you're
now.
From Wisconsin and you listen, we love you. Thank you for listening. Keep it up. But you know who else has a hamburger festival every year? Several states, but one in particular, yes. Hamburg, New York. And they too claim to have invented it. And personally, I think it's a pretty big win that they happen to also be named fucking Hamburg.
It's a coincidence.
I think if you're trying to win the title of We Invented Hamburgers, to name your town Hamburg shows a level of commitment that even if you're wrong, you're in the running. All right. Their story goes that these two fucking brothers from Akron, Ohio, came to sell pork sandwiches at Erie County Fair in 1885. One problem that they ran into is that they didn't bring enough pork to sell pork sandwiches at a county fair in 1885. They sold out and had to replace the pork with ground steak because they couldn't find a butcher that would butcher a pig just for them.
Mm-hmm.
They seasoned it with coffee and brown sugar, which I'm just going to say sounds delicious.
That does sound good.
I'm going to try that now.
Yeah.
So whether this is a real story or not, I'm going to do it. Smashed it between a bun because they're already doing that with pork, and I guess it blew everyone's fucking minds that they did it with beef, and they named it after the town, which is conveniently named after a city in Germany, which is famous for beef. So the whole thing smells like high heaven to me. The Menches brothers, which are the brothers' names, also claim to have invented the ice cream cone.
Oh.
Why fucking not? Why stop at the hamburger? And the story is so eerily similar, too, of how they invented the hamburger. Because they were selling ice cream, and they ran out of bowls. Because these guys never showed up prepared to a single fucking thing in their lives. So they purchased and rolled some zelabia, which is a Syrian pastry, from a booth a couple booths down. They don't give any credit to whatever the name of that fucking booth was. And boom, these two assholes walk backwards into another iconic American staple. Fuck you. I call bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah, Menches brothers. I'm with Sam on this one.
I'm glad you're dead.
Just,
fuck you.
Just
you lying pieces of shit. We're
going to dial it back. Just because.
I'm mad.
Yeah, just because you have a shitty fucking inventory manager doesn't mean you get the ice cream cone and the hamburger. Also, when was Hamburg named, and when did they supposedly, because... You know, I feel like there's a
Hamburg was named before. Yeah, like, so many holes in this fucking story. Fuck you. Also,
fuck you, Menches brothers.
I found an interesting tidbit that throws more shade on their whole hamburger bullshit. I found old Frank Menches's obituary in the New York Times, and it stated that the whole beef or pork penchant scenario happened in 1892 at the Summit County Fair in Akron, Ohio, which kind of makes the whole story of how they named it no longer make sense. And it puts it 7 years after Charlie Cheeseburger claims to have made his ball sandwiches.
Yeah, so it's still later.
It's not the first one.
Yeah.
So being that most of it, most if not all of the Menches brothers' story comes from the surviving family members of the Menches, I suspect that they must have retconned the story after discovering Charlie's claim was earlier, and they wanted to sound like they were first.
Hey, I'm Frankie Menches, and I ran out of cardboard to put under my feet, so I invented shoes.
I'm Frankie Menches, and I got tired of making my wife pregnant, so I invented a condom.
So yes, there are a menagerie of weirdos who all claim that they were the first to come up with a hamburger. At least 10 different people have clutched with greasy fingers at the hamburger throne. And what we can probably say for sure is that the official hamburger as we know it today pops up in the late 19th century, but is considered more of a localized novelty at this point rather than a staple that you can walk 5 blocks in America anywhere for snack. And that takes us to St. Louis, Missouri in 1904 at the World's Fair.
A lot of World's Fair in the hamburger story.
Well, that was, you know, as I read in my research, I don't know if you came across this at all, but the two things that we're going to come up on now are these markers that people, that historians, hamburger historians, hopeofthehamburger.org, have said, like, these are the landmark scenarios that happen to put the hamburger into the popular staple it is today.
Are there still World's Fairs? Why don't they happen anymore?
No, we might have to talk about that at some point.
Yeah,
but
I'd go to one.
Yeah, there's definitely not a World's Fair anymore, I don't think.
That's sad.
Yeah. I think the last one was in the 50s or something. I don't know.
Then what happened?
Vietnam? We all started eating hamburgers and staying home and on our internets.
Yeah.
All day on our Facebooks.
Mark Zuckerberg ruined the World's Fair.
60.
Fucking knew it.
At this World's Fair, 62 countries and 42 states had all sprawled 2 square miles across the landscape displaying the greatest inventions, food, and products all their cultures had to offer.
Wait, sorry. One more sidetrack. Were World's Fairs just opportunities for countries to come flex their shit?
Pretty much, yeah.
I would so go to that.
I know. It sounds awesome.
It sounds awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Especially back then, too. Like, you know, despite, like, all the disease and the racism and all the horrible shit going on. Like, this part sounds cool.
This is nice. Now you made me wonder.
Well, I'm sorry. You know,
suspicious of how cool it was.
Everything's got to be tempered by, you know, what was actually going on at the time. But
yeah,
that's the way I look at it. I'm so fucking jaded and cynical about, you know, some of this shit.
Yeah, I gotcha.
But the X-ray machine here at the World's Fair, the X-ray machine, the first X-ray machine, was side by side with the ice cream cone, apparently invented by the Menchez brothers. Fucking guys.
Bull fucking shit.
These were all marvels of invention, all paling in comparison to the real star of the show. Who was it, Sam? The hamburger.
The meatball sandwich.
It wasn't the wasn't the meatball sandwich. It was the hamburger. The new sandwich showcased to global taste buds was dubbed the innovation of food vendor on the pike by one reporter, which Pike was referring to the Midway at the time.
Because we all know what Midway means. Also, did the hamburger...
Wait, do you not know what it Midway means? What?
Yeah, what's it mean?
You know what a Midway
colloquially,
is.
Colloquially, like, what's the...
At a fair? That's
when do you, when it, when's the last time you said that in passing conversation?
When you're at the fair, you say, let's go to the Midway.
Bull fucking
like,
shit.
Like, that's where all the games
Bull
are.
Bull fucking shit.
I say that a lot.
I've never heard you say that a single time
You've
when we're at a fair.
You've never been to a fair with
me. I've been to the fair with you. We've been to the Renaissance Fair. You've never said Midway. You're full shit.
You're... There's no Midway at the Renaissance Fair.
Oh, isn't there?
No. No, there's not. And there's no hamburgers either. And we'll give a special mention here to Fletch Davis from Athens, Texas, a.k.a. All Dave. Why do these guys all have weird fucking nicknames? But he claims to be the one vendor who was selling his invention, the fucking hamburger, on the Dusty Midway. However, there's zero evidence of Fletch being on the official list of concessions or anywhere on the balance sheet of the World's Fair final receipt. Thanks for playing, Fletch.
He sounds like the guy that did one really cool thing in high school and you run into him at the bar in your hometown and he keeps telling you about it.
You know, I scored 3 hamburgers.
You know, I was at the 1900 fair for it. And fucking so many hamburgers. That hamburger? It's my hamburger.
Didn't put no goddamn coffee in it. It was Menchez Brothers.
Hey, you got that idea for me. Well, that's been on coffee.
They named a hamburger New York after me.
You gotta ride home. I
mean. But regardless of who was selling it, we do know that the hamburger was there, and this shot its popularity through the roof.
However, what? The burger was still more or less still a novelty at this time. It was popular, but nonetheless, it was a novelty. It was only 20 or 30 years old in America, among the mainstream, beyond the Hamburg steak. It wasn't completely cemented into our national DNA, and as we're going to see, there were a couple major events that almost caused the end of our buddy the hamburger.
Yes, there were. I was trying to think of something to say. I ain't got it. So
well, you just said something, so you thought of something.
Yep.
Yeah, thought of something. Good for you.
Why am I picturing my brain as just a hamburger sizzling on a grill right now? Just one tiny hamburger sizzling on a grill. So
that's what I picture brain looks like all the time.
That's right. Because only 2 years after its success at the World's Fair, Upton Sinclair writes his novel, The Jungle, which personally always jumped out at me as a story which promoted the merits of socialism, but also had this inflammatory accounts of hygiene issues related to the meat processing industry of Chicago.
I think you did a typo. I think it's Axl Rose.
The what?
That wrote The Jungle. Welcome to the jungle. We got fun and games. We got everything
was,
you want.
Well, that was actually, so Axl Rose did write that
as an homage to the jungle.
Yeah, more as like an intellectual critique of what he thought
of America's response to the jungle in the subsequent years.
Yeah. Well, you
response
notice
to yeah.
You notice how he said we got fun and games, socialism. We, you know,
the cat, it's the, not the just royal he. We.
He does not have fun and games anyway. This caused distrust among the populace, particularly for one man who was named Teddy Roosevelt, who was sent an advanced copy of the book. And it's important to note that The Jungle was not this straight-up work of fiction, but was a culmination of years' work of investigative journalism on the meatpacking industry by Upton.
Did you read The Jungle?
Yeah.
I read it in high school.
Yeah, what'd you think of it?
It's one of the books that, I don't remember it at all, but it's one of the books that has come up in years since my time in high school that I'm surprised that we read in high school, because I went to a shit high school. But I learned in years since that it was such a profound work that I wish I remembered it more. And that's my input.
It stuck with me. I read it after college, after a friend had loaned it to. I think I read it when I first moved to Baltimore, actually. And I was, trying to find a job. And so my friend was like, "Oh, you're trying to find a job.
Here's the Jungle.
Here's a copy of The Jungle.
Good luck, asshole."
Hope you're not from Lithuania. And so.
Does that have something to do with it?
Well, the guy's from Lithuania, the main character.
No shit. I'm part of Lithuanian.
Yeah.
Isn't this interesting?
Anyway. The Jungle really has left a mark on both of our lives, hasn't it?
I guess.
So Teddy Roosevelt reads this book, and in response, Roosevelt sends his labor commissioner to Chicago to investigate whether there were any merits to Upton's claims or not. And the commissioner found that, they were real fucking bad, man.
They were putting their meat in the meat.
They were putting roaches in the meat. They were letting guys die.
They were dating the meat. Yeah. They were letting the meat go out on a sabbatical.
It was a bad time. It was a bad time. There was
a bad time for meat.
Yeah. I guess the biggest, the two things that stick out for me, insects in the meat, but also
there's a lot of rat shit in the meat. I remember that from high school.
Guys that don't have bathrooms just urinating in the corner.
I don't think that happened for real.
The slaughter.
Did it?
Upton Sinclair said that it did.
Uh-oh.
You know,
wow.
If we're to take that his takes on it, his claims. If
we're
I to
wish
believe
we could normalize
claims.
Piss in the corner again, though. You know what? I'm gonna say it.
So this all props Roosevelt to sign the meat inspection.
Are we still talking about this?
Yes.
All right.
So this prompts Roosevelt to sign the Meat Inspection Act of 1906 into law, which created regulations for meat packers and forced more sanitary practices to be put into effect. Notice, no one made an uproar about the heinous working conditions, which was Sinclair's larger point. He actually, later on in his life, he says, you fuckers missed the goddamn point.
I just passed the Meat Inspection Act. Baron?
This is why we actually need more bathrooms, because Sam, says these things to me, and I don't know what just occurred 5 feet away from me, and I'm frightened. I am frightened for
it's
my
more
personal
like one and
safety.
A half feet away. just under an arm's reach, if you would.
Under. Terrified. I looked at the by the way, I did look at the census data from 1906 to 1910, and I did not find any significant drops in beef manufacturing consumption but according to most historical write-ups on hamburgers that I came across, this all caused a huge drop in beef eating, and this was all in despite of Teddy's scrambling to get the industry under control.
Yeah, I read that too. I read that didn't necessarily cause a major riff, but people, the collective consciousness was that beef was to be suspect, that you couldn't necessarily trust it.
Which doesn't make sense to me, though, because plenty of other animals were slaughtered at those same. It was this conglomerate of five huge slaughterhouses in Chicago that pretty much sent meat out to the whole rest of the country. All your fucking meat was coming from there, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. People aren't smart, Baron.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, they're going to pick one because they can't cut out all meat. It's but chickens are fine,
So
people believe what they want to believe.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm using that as a stepping stone to call out maybe these historical papers, because like I said, I looked at the census data.
Yeah, man. Don't get me started on how unreliable a lot of these sources were. I lost a lot of my weekend to reading an entire article, and then by the end realizing these guys are just—it's speculation. I can't use half of this shit.
Yeah, probably 10 of these articles were written by Ronald McDonald, just poking buttons
trying
at
to throw
cable.
You off the trail. Yeah, because they don't want you to know the history of the hamburger. No. Everything would fall apart. Ronald McDonald killed Charlie Cheeseburger. It wasn't autoerotic asphyxiation.
Or
they were lovers and he fucking killed them.
Or they're the same guy, Sam.
Oh, shit.
They're the same guy. Look at pictures. Look at pictures of Charlie Cheeseburger.
Can we even post this episode? Are we going to get picked up by the secret police of McDonald's?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm just saying, you know, we need to triangulate the data here.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to. It might be me, or it might be somebody, some other crazy person listening to this podcast right now and taking what we say way out of context. Could be.
Don't go shoot up at McDonald's, please. This is the disclaimer. Right, this is right. The disclaimer. Right, do not. Right. There is no hashtag McDonald's gate.
Jesus Christ.
So even after the fall from grace, following the meatpacking renaissance, burgers could still be found on menus and making appearances in local fairs, but it wouldn't be until 1921 in Wichita, Kansas, that we discovered the business duo that not only revived the public's faith in burgers, but also solidified its place in American culture. Billy Ingram, a seasoned line cook and diner owner, and Walter Anderson, an up-and-coming insurance and real estate man, scraped together $700 to open a small hamburger stand. In a time when Americans were weary about the quality of packed meats, these two men were about setting standards that offered a hygienic and properly prepared meal at a time when food regulations were pretty lax.
Let's call them what they are, Sam. Heroes.
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 Heroes. Hashtag heroes. They also set up a model for all of their future locations and their would-be future locations so that customers would receive the same quality burger each time they ordered, no matter which location they ordered from. As more of their restaurants were developed, the company began known for its visionary restaurant system and, more importantly, their top-tier hygienic standards. This restaurant was the White Castle. And it single-handedly put hamburgers on the fast track to becoming synonymous with America, one slider at a time, as fast food chains quickly grew in popularity over the coming decades, and the burger was first picked up as a meal that could quickly, easily, and inexpensively be prepared at more than one location, and more importantly, be reproduced by franchises across the nation. And, more or less, that's the history of hamburgers.
I gotta ask though, how did all the fucking White Castles end up from Kansas into New Jersey? Because that's the only place where the White Castles are right now, right?
Were there
White Castles in
Kansas?
There's
more of them. So they went from Kansas. Billy Ingram bought out Walter Anderson some years after and moved to Columbus, Ohio. That was my nod to Columbus, Ohio in the intro, by the way, and started the franchise there and then expanded from the Midwest, both West and East. But I think it took a bigger hold in the East, but I think they're on the West Coast too.
You think Billy still kicks him? I don't know if he's alive.
Billy's
anymore.
Dead.
you think he was kicking himself in the shin though when he like saw all the franchises go up and like all the popularity and all the money he could have made and just fuck hamburger money.
No, Billy owned it. It was
oh,
Walter
I'm sorry, the other guy.
He bought out Walter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably. I don't know.
Almost hamburger royalties.
I'm also pretty sure that I covered this in hot dogs. Or no, sorry, in drive thru.
With the White Castle?
Yeah, White Castle came out.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it was like one of so many different factoids of the drive thru history. But yeah, I think we do talk about how Walter Anderson reconciled his decision.
All were murdered by Hamburger Charlie in a
by
clown
Mayor
suit.
By Mayor McCheese, which I had a character planned and I forgot about him. But Mayor McCheese
thank God.
Was
thank God you did.
A byproduct of Dr. Mengele's experiments in Nazi Germany because Hamburg, Germany, you know. And Mayor McCheese is a distant relative of the hamburger that Ronald McDonald adopted as a part of his weird motley crew of fast food fucking
wow.
cohort. He was a fucking freed by American troops in 1945, came to America, was elected the mayor of his town. Ronald McDonald sought him out as talent, but because it was like a little podunk town, and he became a part of the crew.
Sounds like a hilarious character, man.
It's heartwarming. Grimace
what does
is
he
kind
want,
of,
though?
Grimace
what does
is
he
the
want?
Same, but Grimace was a part of MK Ultra. That whole crew has fucking baggage.
When is Grimace, like, is that his body, or is he just fused into that suit forever? Like, is
he never
human?
Takes it off.
Yeah.
He can't survive outside of it.
Yeah.
And the Hamburglar is just a cuck.
Right. We talked about that.
Yeah. In the previous, Dirty Bits with BJ.
Rebel.
Is that what he said?
That's what the Hamburglar does. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Rebel. Demean me.
Oh, my God. I hated that. So that was Hamburgers.
Yes, it
wasn't
was.
It? We did it. Is that what we solved did? The mystery.
What, yeah, we sure
from
did.
Genghis Khan to White Castle. Yeah. Who? Man, those bookends. I love those as bookends for this.
Yeah, you should. We should definitely. You should listen to it at least 5 times over just to make sure you get the secret encoded message within our podcast of who invented the hamburger.
Play it backwards.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Take out the first letter of every time one of us changes narrative and see what word it spells.
I'm going to do that.
Do we have social media or something?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wait. Write us a review right now. If you love us, if you enjoyed this.
Use your hamburger-covered fingers.
Stop eating that cheeseburger
smear
for 2 grease
all over your phone
screen. Seconds. Write us a review. Subscribe. Tell your friends to subscribe. Take your parents' phone and subscribe.
I want your phone, when you're done, I want your phone to look like a demolition derby track of grease.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah, from the furious typing of a review that you're leaving us
a
on
a positive
Apple.
Review, not a negative one.
No.
Not one that you were offended by. One that enlightened you and elevated you, and the gift of edutainment brought you to a better place.
Yeah, now you know a little bit more about hamburgers now.
You know a lot more. I would say that you know everything about hamburgers.
What the fuck else do you want from us? You know?
What more do you want?
We try so hard.
Like so much, like every day.
Anyway, put that on the old iTunes for us and send me ideas of, I don't know, send me whatever the fuck you want on the email. That'd be great. Infocast5000@gmail.com.
Yeah, if you want to know.
Send me a letter. Just send me send me a H.
I said this last week on our Dirty Bits, but if there's something that you want to know more about, like you don't want to Google it yourself because you have a life, and you want us to Google it and then talk to you about it next week directly, we will call you out if you want. Tell us. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Shoot us a DM or email us. Yeah, I said it last week. Don't act like it's a new idea.
I will type in a sentence into Google and give you the first result for free. I will read that on air.
That's a freebie.
Yeah.
That's a freebie for you. Check us out on Instagram on Infocast5000, spelled exactly like the podcast you just listened to. And check us out on Reddit. We're on Reddit sometimes, right? Is that how that works?
Oh my God, Sam. No, that's not how it works.
Baron's on Reddit sometimes. And
I am on Reddit, but it's I have a handle called not_really_Greg. You can totally DM me if you get this, but most of the time I post in podcast related subreddits. I'm down to talk.
I guess the point of that is if you find not_really_Greg, if you find him on Reddit and message him directly, we will give you the podcast.